DW Radio presents Inspired Minds with Brendan O'Shea.
Hello and a very warm welcome to this edition of Inspired Minds, a series of programs where we meet musicians, authors and leading figures from all the artistic genres. Today's guest, the violinist and conductor Dmitri Sitskovetsky.
I was born into a musical elite, if you will, you know, of the Soviet artistic community, but it came at a price. And that price I wasn't not willing to pay.
It seemed inevitable that Dmitri Sitskovetsky would grow up to be a musician, his parents being two of Russia's most renowned, the pianist Bela Davidovich and the late violinist Julian Sitskovetsky. Dmitri first studied in Moscow and defected to the United States in the late 70s. Today, he successfully combines a career as a concert violinist with that of a conductor and arranger. As a violinist, he's worked with the world's best orchestras, including the Berlin Philharmonic, London Symphony, Chicago, New York Philharmonic, and Cleveland Orchestras. He is also a frequent performer at many of Europe's most famous music festivals, including the Salzburg Festival and the London Proms. As a conductor, he's appeared as guest conductor with many of the world's great orchestras, was until recently principal conductor and artistic advisor of the Ulster Orchestra in Northern Ireland. Furthermore, Dmitri Sitskovetsky is also renowned for his transcriptions. One such example is his arrangement of Bach's Goldberg Variations. When I met Dmitri Sitskovetsky recently, I asked him firstly about growing up as part of the musical elite in Russia and the influence his parents had on him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my mom has been a great example and a guiding light, though she's a pianist and I'm a violinist. And the reason I'm a violinist was very much because of my father, who passed away when I was only 3.5 years old, and therefore I'd never had a chance to collaborate with him. I just grew up under the influence of his recordings and in many ways been influenced indirectly by him all my life. But my mother, in my opinion, is one of the great examples of a true bel canto piano playing that is all but extinct today. So I grew up in that, you know, under her piano listening when I was a little toddler, and then later on. Also, she's a great example. I don't think I've ever met an artist who is so responsible, so professional, and so prepared. But having said all that, I must say that for years, when I was sort of in my late teens, I would say, when we did a few recitals together, and then later on, it was a period where we didn't get along musically. Probably not only musically, as often happens, you know, with children and parents. And I was very much trying to, you know, to establish my own view of music, and we wouldn't get along. I mean, we are very different even today. I came to the West when I was not quite 23 years old. She came out of Russia when she was 50. There's a big difference.
It's an incredible difference. I mean, tell us a little bit about that story. I mean, how that came about, because if your father died when you were so young, then you obviously had lots to do with your mum throughout.
Oh, yeah. Well, I actually grew up with my nanny more than I did with my mum, because she was on the road. I mean, when my father died, she was the only breadwinner. And so she was on the road a lot, and she taught in Moscow Conservatory. And so I really grew up with my nanny, and then later on my uncle was very involved, my father's younger brother. You know, when I left the Soviet Union, which was in a way a shock for her, because she had no intentions of leaving. And the reason of her leaving was probably because of two situations. One, that she could no longer see me, and two, because her foreign tour has been stopped since she had an emigre son. So in a way, they pushed her out that way, which was lucky. So she came out at 50. And I was lucky enough to leave Russia at 22, not quite 23. And I went to school. And I remember one of my colleagues who came as a very celebrated dissident musician and made a huge splash in America. He asked me, he said, why did you go to school in New York? You were already laureate of several competitions. You could have just wanted the career, wouldn't you? I said, that's the smartest thing I did. He said, why? I said, because I know the West, not like you guys, from outside. I know it from inside. I went to school here. I understood how things work. I became, in many ways, a Western artist because I learned the language properly. I went to school here. I have just as many friends, probably more friends, not non-Russian speaking, all over the world. And I married a non-Russian. She's an American soprano. Susan Roberts has been living in Europe for years. Maybe in third generation she is from Russia, but that's not necessarily, you know, her most... the strongest characteristic. So I really lived in the West without thinking that I would ever come back to Russia. I came here to set the roots and to make a life for myself.
I'm very interested in this story of you actually leaving. I mean, that must have really been quite a decision for a 22-year-old and a very lonely time as well when you basically cut the roots, and you really did, because there was no going back in those days.
Yes, well, 77 was a very different time to leave Russia than 10, 12 years later, and certainly not now. I mean, now people live in both countries. They could have passports from the West and go back and forth and so forth. No, that was a very different time. At that time, if one decided to leave, one, it was very difficult to accomplish, because at 22, I would have been immediately taken by the Soviet army, drafted into the army. Because what happens... when you apply, when you receive, let's say, an invitation from so-called relative from Israel, because that was the only channel to leave, not only for the Jews, as in my case, but also for any nationality, they had to pretend that they had Jewish relatives in Israel or somebody living there. There were very few, because immigration simply was not admitted in Russia, even though thousands of people were exchanged for American grains and wheat. You know, we were really exchanged for bread. In Russia, but official version was not that, you know, single cases of families reuniting were allowed, you know, to go and settle in Israel or some rare case in America and Europe. So when you applied, you were immediately expelled from a college, in my case, Moscow Conservatory, and then drafted into the army, and that was the end of your career as a musician, because that would put you into a unit that would never see you a musician again. So a whole elaborate plot had to be thought out, and I obtained a medical leave of absence for a year, which by Soviet law, they couldn't expel me, no matter what. But in order to obtain that, I had to go to a clinic for nervous diseases. And that's a story I could write one day, maybe a novel, just by the month there. But I obtained the necessary documents from the doctors. I completely stopped playing in public. Everybody thought, because the purpose was not only officially gain a year to make it happen, but also to convince the government that investment that they made on my part was lost, that I was not going to be a violinist anymore. And so there was no reason for them to keep me. So in my case, it worked. It was a very elaborate plan, rather advanced for a 22-year-old, but I was well advised also by older people or people who'd done this before, who were monitoring all of that. It was completely unknown to my family. They didn't know what the hell I was doing. And there was a period...
How do you keep something like that from, I mean, a 22-year-old only child, right?
Yeah, I was the only child. Oh, it was a period of great differences of, you know, way of... the relationship with the system, relationship with the country, relationship with the future of that place. You know, I knew very well at that point what I was facing if I'd stayed. I knew the advantages and I knew the disadvantages. Because I was born into a musical elite, if you will, you know, of the Soviet artistic community. But it came at a price. And that price I wasn't not willing to pay. I was not as scared as my mother's generation because I never lived under Stalin. I was born after 1 year after he died. So I was not so paranoid about the system, even though it was plenty to be fearful about. So I, in a way, I beat the system. I learned it. I knew, I figured how to work it to get out. And I left with all my talent and skills intact. That they couldn't stop. I couldn't take my violin with me, not even a bow. I left with a factory-made violin and no bows at all. But then later on, I built something for myself. Yeah.
I guess I want to know a little bit more about what it was like when you first arrived in New York.
Oh, yeah. On my third day from the arrival, the very next day I went to Juilliard and realized that was the last week of entrance exams. So I filled out whatever forms. I called Galamian, asked him to hear me. He had no time. But then 2 days later, I played my exam and took other five exams to get into the Juilliard School. And Galamian took me into his class. And sort of that was adjustment period was very brief. And I stayed 2 years at Juilliard, had a wonderful time. And that was the best school, sort of baptism by fire, which I had adjusting to the whole new world and the whole... The great thing in retrospect, which I can see now, that there are only two cities that are really so close in its scope and its pulse and its dynamics. It's exactly Moscow and New York. And I came from Moscow, and I'm very much a Moscovite. I've lived now in Moscow, New York, and London, so three great cities. So I'm a big city boy. So I wasn't scared so much by New York. I embraced it and became part of it. And that was great. The two student years that I had, 77 to 79, I have some of the best memories. It was incredibly hard financially and very difficult. I had to play all the gigs in town and played even on the street for some, you know, change. And, you know, I remember playing Bach D minor partita with a chiffon for a handful of taxi drivers in the Sixth Avenue, you know, in the afternoon. And a few days later, I won a Bach competition in Washington. I mean, there were things, and I'd already played at Carnegie Hall, you know, as a student, but as a soloist too. So, you know, it was everything there. New York is really sort of the quintessence of life, and certainly the Western life as we know it. So it was great luck that I came.
Violinist Dmitri Sitskovitsky performing Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields and Neville Mariner directing. And that brings us to the end of this week's Inspired Minds. But before I leave you, a reminder to check out the Inspired Minds homepage. The website provides not only comprehensive information on the career and works of our guests, but also little-known facts about their personal lives and tastes, photos, archive recordings and readings. The address is easy, www.inspiredminds.de. I repeat, www.inspiredminds.de. Thanks for joining us today. Next week's Inspired Mind is the dancer Sabina Kupfenberg. But till then, this is Brendan O'Shea saying goodbye from DW Radio, Cologne, Germany.